Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
What's today? August 1. Good morning. Welcome to For Your Benefit. We're having a great time talking here, and we didn't know we were on the air. Anyway, welcome to today's show. We're here with Phil Gardner, and Phil is a former human resource specialist at OPM. But you were like a major force at OPM, I do believe.
Well, I think that's overstating it a bit.
Okay, well, you're very modest, but we're fortunate enough to have Phil work with us at NITP. He's a fellow seminar presenter. And today he's going to talk about things some people would be interested in and some people ought to be interested in. We're talking about effects of divorce on federal benefits. So we're going to have a divorce decree or a court order, and there are issues with that that probably many people are emotionally charged with it and maybe not with a whole lot of base level knowledge. So where do we get that knowledge?
So, yeah, it is a hot button issue, obviously. It's the subject no one wants to talk about, but everyone wants to talk about. I get a lot of questions about it when I'm teaching seminars. So, a lot of people think just because they've been divorced, automatically someone's coming after their retirement or coming after their insurance or whatever. And it's just not that way. It has to be it's a negotiation between attorneys or between the parties about how assets are going to be divided up. So a retirement account, such as a federal retirement account, a life insurance policy, it's a piece of property like anything else that you accumulate during a marriage, and people want a piece of that. So in order for a court order to affect a retirement annuity, such as undisturbed or FERS, it has to be what OPM calls a court order acceptable for processing, or a COAP, as opposed to private insurance and annuities covered by ERISA, where everything has to be a QUADRO, a qualified domestic relations order. The government doesn't accept qualified domestic relation orders unless they happen to be a court order acceptable for processing. So to be acceptable for processing for a retirement account, for instance, meaning SERS or FERS, it has to identify that employee or annuitant by name, identify which retirement system they are in, SERS or FERS, and then it has to specifically award a portion of a benefit to the former spouse, be that the annuity, the survivor annuity, or both.
I would think that both sides ought to know this stuff. No? I mean, the federal employee, retiree, has to know what their rights are to say you can't have this or you can't have that. It shouldn't be acrimony, but if there's going to be acrimony, it's going to be in a divorce. And the other one would like to think it's maybe more than, or surprised that it's anything.
Yeah, I think that's true. It's it's another asset to be negotiated. It's no different than dividing up the furniture, who gets the house, et cetera. Now you've got a retirement account that one of the two has built up over a number of years while they were married. The other, the spouse supported them during that. And, when the spouse equity law passed in 1985, the whole idea about it was to give former spouses some protections when it came to, especially, the spouses who gave up a career to, stay at home, raise kids and all that. Now they've suddenly they've got no benefits, right? And if they get divorced, now all of a sudden, that benefit that they would be sharing a part of in the person's continued life is now no longer available to them. So we were mentioning earlier before we came on, it's sort of a cottage industry. Attorneys who know all about this and, will advise people when they sit down for a divorce decree. Now, when they start talking about divorce negotiations, they'll – it's really up to the attorneys also to know what benefits are available and payable.
Over the years, I've had attorneys call me, and I don't profess to know this. I know it a little bit, but I also know where to point them. Some are unaware of this document that's been prepared. But if I was the federal employee, and I'm looking to ways to protect my assets from being awarded to somebody else, I think I don't want to give the impression that there's a way to duck it. It's just you need to understand what they may be entitled to or what they may not be entitled to if the other side maybe sees that there are some other things that they should be entitled to.
Yeah, so, you know, you run into a situation, as long as you have people where both people are working, both people have retirement plans, so a negotiation will be, I leave your retirement plan alone, you leave mine alone. Other people will try to negotiate some other asset, say, hey, I'll give you this if you don't put in a claim on my retirement, that kind of thing. Again, I guess I can't say it enough. It's an asset. You know, it's a marital asset that can be divided by a court.
Seems to me, though, the annuity, if I was in the middle of all this, I won't call it a gift, but it's a gift that keeps giving. The gift is the individual work. A certain career, and not the gift. They worked hard, but at the end, the marriage continues, if you will. But maybe the husband-wife marriage or wife-husband marriage doesn't continue. But they would like a piece of that earned gift. And how does that work? I mean, can you say the marriage lasted 12 years of the individual's career of 30 years? Do they get 40% of the annuity?
Well, again, it's all in what's in the court order. So there's three ways a court order can work. One, it can be a set amount where the attorneys work out, or the parties, either one, a specified dollar amount that'll ever go to a spouse every month. It could be part of their annuity. It could be a survivor annuity. And it's literally going to be taken from the one annuity, from the annuitant, and paid to the former spouse. It can be a set percentage. In other words, they've already figured out what percentage it ought to be. What you were talking about, Howard, is what's called a pro rata share,
mm-hmm.
where it's based on the number of months or the years and months that someone was both married and federally employed, and then divided by the total number of months at the end of the career. So, and then times 50% of an annuity. So take a 30-year federal career where the person was married to the same person for 20 years of that. Of that 30 years. So the simple math would be they would be entitled to, if it's in the court order as a pro rata share, 2/3 of 50% of that person's annuity. Could work the same way for the survivor annuity.
What if somebody didn't know, and let's say neither one of the parties was represented by somebody that knew? I mean, this is pretty remote. But, you know, outside of maybe metro areas, they might not have attorneys that specialize in OPM divorces. Then it's whatever the judge knows or doesn't know. In other words, there could be a disadvantage. I remember many years ago, Gies here, individual called up and throughout their career, for CSRS, doesn't make any difference. There's a percentage of your salary every pay period that goes to fund FERS or CSRS or offset or something like that. And this individual, I'll never forget it, it was $40,000 that he had put in during the career. And he it was a seminar and called up after the seminar and says, you know, my spouse wants $40,000. And I said, what's that based on? Well, that's the amount of money I put into the system. And I said, well, you know, you never want to really take advantage of anybody, but you asked me the question, get a check for $40,000 as fast as you can, because if you get a piece of an annuity, it's a payment for life.
It is a payment for life. A lot of people think that if the former spouse gets remarried, that somehow wipes out that portion they're entitled to. Well, it does not. They may lose title to the survivor annuity portion if they remarry prior to age 55. You can remarry, you know, as the day after you get divorced and still get the portion of annuity that the court order awards you or the property settlement.
Okay, so is it called a court order acceptable for processing? Is that what's done before it goes to OPM?
So when OPM receives it, they're reviewing a court order to see if it's a court order acceptable for processing.
Okay.
I guess court order is kind of a funny term, because I had this discussion with a guy in one of my classes. He said, well, I don't have a court order. I said, well, do you have a divorce decree? He says, yes, I have a divorce decree. I said, does divorce decree divide your annuity or provide a portion? Yes, it does. I said, well, that's considered the court order. He thought he had to go out and get some separate court order, mm-hmm. separate from the divorce decree. And usually it's either going to be in the divorce decree or it's going to be in an attached property settlement.
Okay. In the case of a marital situation, the marriage could have started after the employee, the federal employee, was already working for Uncle. How do you do that one? Because I would think the latter part of that person's career is the fattest part of the annuity.
So it's not looked at in that way in terms of what's the fattest part of the annuity. You know, an annuity is an average salary over the highest 3 years and over a total length of service of the employee's career, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if the person comes into the federal, I was not married when I entered the federal government. I was unmarried. And I got married about 2 years into my career. Well, that 2 years, that's when sort of the clock started for our period of time, both married and federally employed. It really, one way you can limit the how much of it might cost by saying a pro rata share as of a specific date, such as of the divorce decree, and specify that the partner doesn't get the effect of any additional cost or any additional pay raises or additional service performed after the divorce. And that's fairly common. That's the way I did mine.
Okay, and then the divorce happens, the annuity gets split, however it gets split, and both parts would get COLAs.
Correct. So as the COLAs applied to let's just be straight up here. I have a court order, and I have a portion being taken out of my annuity, and it's based off the pro rata share as of the date of our divorce. And every time I get a COLA, then that portion is still divided up the exact same way. So yes, essentially the former spouse's portion in this case gets a COLA, as does mine.
All right, I'm thinking the show's listened to. Clearly outside the Beltway, and somebody might be in a town where the knowledge of this is not, it can't be found. So is there anybody that ever looks at it when it gets to OPM and says, you're really entitled to this, but it isn't mentioned?
No. It's strictly whether it's a court order acceptable for processing upon arrival.
Mm-hmm.
OPM's not in the business of recommending how to write court orders. They do have the suggested language in that handbook for attorneys on court order benefits. And any attorney who's going to be involved in one of these processes really ought to go to opm.gov and get that handbook for attorneys.
Yeah, I would think, and not picking on the attorneys, it could be an accountant, but, providing cash flow advice. But they need to understand that, first of all, they probably shouldn't be doing that, but, that's for somebody else to explain. Because in the accounting world, it's what if we do this or that. In your world, if you will, it's this is what it is based on this calculation.
Right. So the decision on how to write up a court order is going to have to be made by an attorney or suggested by the client or whatever. Because, again, and in that handbook, there is suggested language, which is based on the regulations, which if you use this language and you're looking to do this, with the court order, use this language. If you're looking for this, do this. And it's really kind of laid out in a nice manner in that court order, in that handbook for court for attorneys.
Okay, why don't we do this? Why don't we take a break? Because we covered a lot of things. Give people a minute to breathe, as well as to listen to what the sponsor of the show, WEPA, can offer them with regards to life insurance.
You have life insurance to protect the people you love. As a civilian federal employee, you have two choices designed specifically for you, WEPA and Fegley. The big difference? Price. Chances are WEPA premiums will cost you less. In fact, the average WEPA member saves $375 per year on premiums. Prioritize your peace of mind with a life insurance policy designed for feds by feds. If you're a civilian federal employee interested in comparing WEPA to Fegley, visit waepa.org today. WEPA is a proud sponsor of 4-Year Benefit, presented by NITP, Mondays 10:05 to 11 a.m. on Federal News Network 1500 a.m. WAIPA's been ensuring the future of federal workers for more than 75 years. See why over 46,000 feds have already switched to WAIPA at waepa.org.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're here today talking about divorce, the OPM's treatise on divorce. And Phil Gardner knows this. He was a former federal employee, career at OPM, human resource specialist. But, I mean, you were like a big dog too, right?
You keep saying that. Yeah. I was a senior specialist in the office. How about that? Will that suffice?
Well, all you know, my career doing these seminars, I think I heard your name early on and I could be earning it. So. Anyway.
I did get around.
Yeah, you get around, but you also can explain something highly complex and put it into words many of us can understand. So thanks for doing that. Prior to the break, we talked about this. What is it called?
Court order acceptable for processing. It's a mouthful, huh?
Okay, yeah. But some people may not be aware of that. So is there a difference between CERS and FERS as to what somebody gets?
Well, there's a difference in CERS and FERS, obviously, in the level of benefit and straight annuity benefit provided. It doesn't change how a court order is applied to it. It's still going to be applied to whatever that annuity benefit is. The only one difference would be on a survivor annuity. Under CERS, the full base survivor annuity can be as high as 55%, 55% of someone's unreduced annuity, whereas FERS, it's only 50%. But that's the only really difference between.
We'll go outside of the annuity just for a second. I would think as well, the amount of money in the thrift, there's a discussion there with regards to divorce. I don't want to really go there, but for somebody listening, they're going to go, well, the FERS individual might have a whole lot higher chunk change in the thrift. But I would imagine that would be a discussion item as well on the settlement.
Oh, absolutely. So TSP has a set of regulations about court orders and how it affects TSP accounts as well. Similar to OPM, TSP has what's an acceptable court order. They call them retirement benefits court orders, and they talk about being a qualifying retirement benefit court order, or RBCO. And it means simply it has to be issued by a court of the U.S., U.S. territories, or an Indian court, refer specifically by name to the thrift savings plan, and clearly describe a payee's entitlement, meaning the former spouse's entitlement. It could be a specified dollar amount. It could be a fraction or a percentage as of a specific date. Could be a pro rata share. I think the difference between TSP and the annuity, someone has to wait. The former spouse has to wait for the person to actually retire to get their award. With a TSP, as soon as that divorce is final, the split is made and right at the time of the divorce. In other words, the former spouse isn't waiting for the person to retire to get their benefit. It becomes in effect their account, the former spouse's account, when they move X percent, X amount over.
Mm-hmm. I'd imagine Social Security falls under the same general guidelines as this treaty.
No, Social Security is totally different. So, of course. Social Security doesn't take money away from one and give it to the other, as it happens with the TSP and with annuities. Under Social Security, if you were married to someone for 10 years and you get divorced, they can get benefits. They have to be unmarried. The former spouse has to remain unmarried, not the employee, but the former spouse. The ex-spouse has to be 62 or older. For instance, a former spouse might get awarded. It'll be 50%, roughly half, depending on when they claim it, someone's amount of Social Security. But it's not taken from the annuitant. They just get that award and if it's higher than the Social Security benefit they're entitled to on their own account, mm-hmm. then they will get that higher amount from the former spouse's account. But it's not a takeaway like it is with CERS and FERS, where they actually take money from one and give it to the other.
Okay, so Uncle picks up that tab then, huh?
I think you're right. Uncle picks up that tab.
Yeah, I remember there was something, I can't remember what it was, but it was somebody that retired under CERS And it was after 10 years, I think, there was something that happened there. But they didn't want to work, or I guess they didn't want to earn anything that would be subject to Social Security. There was some trick there, and I'm babbling, so I'm not making any sense, Phil. Sorry.
Well, yeah. I think the trick you're referring to is under CSRS, the original retirement system, which is coming up on its 100th year anniversary, by the way. The participants were excluded from Social Security, so unless you got your Social Security quarters from some other manner, you would not earn a Social Security benefit based on your SERS service. I was in that category. I was under SERS for 41 years. You know, if you looked at my earnings record, I would look like a deadbeat because my Social Security earnings for a lot of those years was zero because my earnings weren't subject to Social Security. I did have earnings on the side that qualified me for getting enough quarters for Social Security. But I think what you're saying is the trick was not for someone after they retired, not necessarily go back to work long enough to earn a Social Security benefit. I mean, to me, it's kind of, cutting off your nose to spite your face, or however that saying goes, because it doesn't cost the wage earner anything for a former spouse to end up with a Social Security benefit based off their account.
Okay. Agreed. And then they'd have to work 10 years as well.
Well, you get 10 years. Yeah, exactly. 40 credits, 10 years roughly.
When you retire, who wants to work another 10 years just to get – well, I shouldn't say that. Somebody might retire young.
That's very true. Very true. And a lot of people have other employment before they went into SERS or during breaks in SERS service or something where they – were subject to Social Security and could end up with 40 quarters.
All right. When you teach, and you teach often, you used to teach us when you were at OPM how to do it right, but now when you talk to the classes, do you find anything? Well, let's look at two opposite ends. Something you figure the subject should have been known, and what subject is very popular that they didn't really have any idea that they had it. Is that an unfair question?
No. I'll say this. So, yeah, I probably average 5 or 6 seminars a month, maybe a little more, a little less, I don't know. And it's I love getting able to go out there and work directly with employees, because throughout my career, for the most part, I was working with other HR specialists, training them. So now to get a chance to realize that you've got a room full of people who are, one of the questions I ask is, how many people in the room are federal benefit specialists? And, of course, no one raises their hand because – they're not. And I say, good, because you're not expected to be either, because this is pretty complex stuff. There's a lot of moving parts. But, boy, as soon as you start talking about court order benefits, all of a sudden the room gets kind of quiet and people start looking at you and going, uh-oh, where's this going,
But it's good because they can ask the questions. I'd imagine you don't take any breaks. You the line forms to the right and probably after class as well. But that's good, and it shows that to me, it's horribly complex to know the benefits.
So if nobody comes to me with a question on break or during lunch, then I feel like I haven't done my job to give them enough information to be able to even ask a question.
Yeah. So what's the toughest question you ever got asked?
What's the toughest question I ever got asked? Wow.
Folks, this is not scripted.
No, it's not scripted. I think you just asked me the toughest question I've ever been asked, Bob.
Okay.
I can't think of one off the top of my head. I apologize.
To me, they would all be tough. But.
Well, you spend 41 years of a career, working pretty much all in the same programs. I tell you what, here's one. Okay, so I often have to give a disclaimer about midway through my class saying, you might not be able to ask me a question about SERS or FERS or health or life insurance that I can't answer. But I said, I have a lot of Social Security knowledge, for instance, but I never worked a day for Social Security. So when people start asking me process questions, how does Social Security do this? How does Social Security do that? I have to tell them, I have to give them that qualified answer. Look, I've never worked for Social Security, so I don't know their internal procedures. I know their laws, their regulations, et cetera, but not anything to do with specifically how they do something.
Okay, we got several emails, questions here. And to be fair, from the same person that I bet 15, 20 years really sends in good questions. But here we go. Will the former spouse be notified of the benefits?
So to start with, if someone's still employed, it's up to the It's really up to the HR office at that agency to provide a lot of this information for former spouses. Once a former spouse has submitted a court order for review by OPM, yes, there is definitely a notice that goes out letting them know first that the court order has been received, and then what's been determined, what the court order's providing, and a letter goes out and tells them this is what you're entitled to. It goes to the employee as well, or annuitant if they're already retired, and this is what the court order does, and gives them the opportunity to appeal OPM's decision, either from the former spouse if they think they're entitled to more, or for the employee annuitant who may not think the spouse is entitled to anything. So, yeah, letters definitely go out.
All right, Ian, I think we covered this, but let's do it one more time. How long does one have to be married to be eligible for these benefits?
So there's really no set time limit except for under Social Security where they have that 10-year rule. For an annuity, a survivor annuity, for a portion of the survivor annuity, for instance, they would have to have been married 9 months, just 9 months. For a portion of the annuity, there's no set time, but if it's a pro rata share, for instance, and I wouldn't think any good attorney would allow someone who's been married for 1 year to run away with half of someone's retirement benefit. If you were only married for 1 year out of a 30-year career, that's a very small portion being awarded, but there is no quote-unquote time limit except, again, 9 months to be eligible for the portion of the survivor annuity and 10 years on the Social Security side.
So it would be kind of a shame towards the end of one's career if in order to hit that 1 year, they might not rush to the court to get that. Because if nothing else, the health insurance.
Well, now health insurance is I think that's where I see a lot of surprises on health insurance. When former spouse, first an annuitant being surprised that the former spouse could be entitled to health benefits. But for instance, a former spouse can't stay on an employee or annuitant's health insurance. They don't meet the definition of a family member as a former spouse. So the way it works now, as soon as a federal employee gets divorced, they either change their health benefits plan to self only if there's no kids involved, or self plus one if there's only one kid, or if they still have a couple kids around and they still have the family, they have to contact the carrier to let them know they've been divorced, so that the carrier knows that former spouse is no longer eligible for health benefits. Now, that doesn't mean the former spouse is cut out of health benefits. As long as they've been awarded a portion of annuity or the survivor annuity, then OPM is going to offer them the opportunity to enroll in spouse equity health benefits. It's the former spouse's own plan. They pay the premium either directly or out of their portion of annuity or survivor annuity, but they have to pay the full premium. In other words, the employee share and the government share. Mm. Whereas as an employee, as an annuitant, the government's paying about 65% of the premium.
Wow. Here's a question, but you've already answered it. How much would one's benefit amount be reduced due to a divorce? And it really isn't due to the divorce. It's I won't call it shake and bake, but it's got a handbook, and it's really years in service versus years marriage.
If they go pro rata share, but it's all in what the court order provides. In other words, if the court order says a set dollar amount, then that's what OPM is going to pay. Say the court order says $500 a month, then that's what OPM is going to pay. If it's stated like that, $500 a month, there's not going to be any cost of livings because the court order just said $500, a set amount, unless the court order specifically gave them cost of livings. If it's a set percentage, 25%, so the person's going to get 25% of the annuity. That would go up with cost of livings because it's a percentage. Pro rata share, again, is where it's depending on how long you were both married and federally employed.
Okay, let's take what you just mentioned. If somebody didn't know any better and they were just looking for X dollars per month, let's assume there was no professional guidance there. They're both, oh, okay, this is fair. Does anybody tap the other one on the shoulder and say, you know, there's a handbook here that would be of great benefit to you? I don't think anybody can do that because you're getting into somebody's business.
Well, I've noticed that people usually aren't shy about getting into other people's business. There's always people, you know, when you're going through a divorce, you've got people in your ear and you've got friends who, well, when I retired, this happened, or when I got divorced, you got for the non-employee side, for the divorced spouse, you know, they've got friends who've been divorced and got this and that and the other. So there's a lot of people chirping in your ear telling what you ought to do. The smartest thing, I think, and I'm not here to endorse attorneys or anything, but it's to let qualified people work this out so you don't make mistakes, you know, so that, you know, I didn't really have a problem with my former spouse getting a share of, what I earned while we were together. Okay, I would rather not have, but I didn't really, you know, by the same token, I can understand, you know, the fairness of it.
There's a fairness doctrine.
Fairness doctrine. There you go. So, you know, but a lot of people have people chirping in the ear. A lot of people will be recommending, I had this attorney and he got this for me. I had that attorney, and, you know.
Okay. Another one of the questions. What happens when both are federal employees and they're divorcing? I won't say divorced. There's probably is there an equalization factor there? There's invariably one's going to be at a higher compensation level than the other one, which might translate to a higher annuity than the other one.
Sure. So, yeah, I talk to people a lot, the people who come up to me on breaks and at lunch, and they will say, you know, hey, I'm getting ready to get divorced. My husband's a federal employee too. We don't want to touch each other's benefits. Can we do that? And I said, yeah, of course you can do that. You know, if you're both reasonably equal and, you know, you want to, I don't want to say waive your right to it, because there's really no waiving. It's all in what's negotiated in the court settlement. But that is, you know, a fairly common situation. Probably when I give a seminar, there'll be 20 people there. There'll be at least 2, 3, 4 people there in that room that are married to someone who's a federal employee or an annuitant already. And I've had people tell me specifically when I've asked about these court benefits, when they've said, what can my spouse get from my annuity? And I always say, so what, you know, what was negotiated? And they said, well, we're both feds, about the same grade. You know, we're going to get our own annuities. So, you know, we've decided we're just going to let each other keep each other's own annuities. Is that okay? And I say, of course it's okay. As long as there's nothing in the court order that says anything different, fine. You know, if the court order doesn't mention annuity or TSP account or life insurance policy, if it doesn't mention it in the court order, then there's no provision to affect it.
Wow. And then one more, and then we'll take a break. This actually happened, invariably you're going to deal with divorce if you're dealing with people and individuals and the like. And this individual, the one spouse, had a nice annuity, and the other spouse didn't have that many years in service. And I go, well, you know, there's a squaring up, and they go, no, I don't want to do any, whatever it is, it is. Because there were substantial assets of the individual with the lower annuity, and they didn't want to be perceived as a pain, and I guess the other side wasn't aware of the assets. They were assets that would have been there once they turned a certain age, or I forget whether it was it was a certain age. So there were no assets until they met that test, but they just didn't want anybody to go, oh yeah, that's fine, you know, see you around the beach. Anyway, talking about see you around the beach, I'm told it's time to take a break, and we'll listen to what NITP can do for the listeners.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away? It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
Experience the difference. A FederalNewsRadio.com. Federal Drive host, Tom Temin.
You can never start too early on a federal cybersecurity career. That's why the National Security Agency sponsors dozens of cyber summer camps throughout the country. College of Cyber Dean Steve LaFountain tells me camps accommodate middle schoolers through high school seniors, and there's even a camp for teachers. For more, search Temin.
Experience the difference. Tom Temin on FederalNewsRadio.com.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're talking with Phil Gardner. Phil is a former OPM exec, human resource specialist, fellow seminar presenter, and what's been really nice, this is boots on the ground information. So you've been there, done it, you teach it, and you've probably been asked every question that can be asked. But we haven't talked about, have we talked about life insurance?
No, we haven't hit life insurance yet.
Okay, let's talk about life insurance now. Life insurance, it doesn't come as a benefit, right? It comes with a cost.
It's true. Now, employees are automatically enrolled in basic life insurance as soon as they are employed in a career position. They can waive that coverage, you know, go get other types of coverage. You know, they have optional coverage that people can get and such.
But they're going to pay for this, right?
They're going to pay for it, yeah. Right. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, they pay for everything. Yeah, the annuity they pay for, there's a percentage of your salary for that. There's a premium based on amount of coverage for life insurance. But life insurance is another asset. Really, it's another asset if you think about it. And a court order can affect the life insurance. People, I think that's maybe one of the more surprising things that people hear. A court order can act as a designation. In other words, if it can require the employee to assign their insurance to the former spouse. It can just award a portion or all of the insurance proceeds, whatever, in the court order. So unlike the annuity where OPM is the one who interprets the court order and does so sometimes before the person even retires, the court order that affects life insurance, FEGLI insurance, I'm speaking of, the Federal Employees Group Life Insurance, and specifically I'm thinking of, is the court order mentions that and awards something of the life insurance to the former spouse. That court order goes into a person's official personnel folder, which is now electronic OPF, or into their retirement case file if they're already retired. And it goes in order, date order, with all the various designations of beneficiaries. Someone has done where someone designates who they want to get their life insurance proceeds. And if the court order awards something in the life insurance, a person sort of loses control of their own life insurance, so to speak, or can potentially, because what happens is they can still file designations after this court order that's awarded some, all or part of the life insurance to the former spouse. The person can continue to submit designations, but they may or may not be effective. And just when the person, when the employee or annuitant passes away, that file goes to the Office of Federal Employees Group Life Insurance for final adjudication. They have the sole authority to adjudicate that retirement claim that insurance claim and determine who the correct payee is. And they're going to look at the designations. They're going to look at the court order. If there's no designations, they'll be looking at the order of precedence and determining who the correct payee is and in how much. So that court order can end up acting in effect as a designation of beneficiary.
So if the individual did not want FEGLI and the court order knew that they had FEGLI and they dropped FEGLI, would they be required to get it elsewhere if they don't want to be covered by FEGLI? If the one side says you got to provide life insurance, you can shop wherever you want, but if you don't want FEGLI, that doesn't mean you don't have to have it.
Sure. So that goes into well, an area a little bit out of my expertise, talking about private insurance companies, whether courts can order that or not. Again, it all depends on what the judge says, you know, at the final, when the final gavel goes down, when it's final. Essentially what a judge is doing is approving, in effect, if you think about it, a preset settlement that's been negotiated. And then essentially if the divorce decree is granted, it's kind of incorporating all those things into it. Could the court make someone get life insurance? I suppose it could. It couldn't. I don't believe it could make them get Ofegley, for instance. And even if the court said someone could, OPM wouldn't be part of it to tell the person you have to enroll in life insurance.
Yeah. But, I mean, they don't have to get Ofegley. They could get, I mean, WAPA, there's the life insurance companies and the like. So there might be. It might be a requirement to have life insurance. Where somebody gets it should probably be immaterial, but I was just wondering if it would be some kind of violation of OPM's rules that they don't get Ofegley.
It would not be a violation.
I wouldn't think.
Employees are, again, they get it automatically unless they waive it.
Right.
And employees do waive it. A lot of employees find, you know, better life insurance values outside of Ofegley and go do that.
Okay.
OPM can only work with Ofegley. That's the only benefit under their control when it comes to life insurance.
Okay. All righty. Let's say surprises with regards to life insurance on both sides. One side, the individual getting divorced, knew something more about the individual that's being divorced. Did anything ever pop out in looking at the different cases and whatnot, or dealing with people, and you go, wow, they should have known this?
I guess I'll take my own case. I was rather surprised that my life insurance benefits never came up in the whole discussion of various property settlements. The life insurance never came up. It's not in the court decree, so it's something I don't have to worry about. So I guess in that regard, you know, it's all in what the spouse or former spouse, I should say, knows about federal benefits and what they could be awarded and what their attorney may know to include certain things into the divorce decree.
When was that OPM handbook, when was it written?
Oh, my gosh.
Roughly.
I'm going to say late 80s, because the spouse equity law, again, became effective, I think it was May 7, 1985. So before that, there was no need to have a court order, you know, handbook for attorneys on court orders, because there was no such thing.
See, that's kind of what I remember a little bit but I knew enough that something was one-sided. I didn't know enough to say, hey, this is wrong. But I could say, listen, this appears one is taking advantage of the other one. You know, I don't want to be Pollyanna, but, you know, sometimes that's your client. And then the handbook came, and he go, you know, they got this thing at OPM called the handbook. And as I understand, it's written so tight that it's had little to no changes since it was written.
Right, because there haven't been a lot of changes in spouse equity provisions over the years. If I had one piece of advice to give anyone getting ready to go through a divorce that has federal benefits involved, it would be to make sure that my attorney is aware of the existence of that that handbook for attorneys on court order benefits. Because there's also similarly, the other thing I would tell them is that there is a OPM pamphlet available at opm.gov on court-ordered benefits. And I think if between both a spouse and the former spouse, or excuse me, the employee and their spouse, soon-to-be former spouse, should both have a copy of the handbook for their attorney and a copy of the publication for themselves. Because if you read that, you know, you can educate yourself on what's available out there, both for the employee to know what sort of their rights are and, you know, what they can protect, et cetera, and for the former spouse to know what their rights are and what they can do to get, you know, their quote-unquote fair share.
Okay, good. Just got an email. What happens when a federal employee was divorced twice and both marriages lasted more than 10 years? How much will the federal employee benefits be reduced? Now, that one might be hard, but I mean, what do you do there?
That's well, okay. So divorce decrees, and we, you know, OPM does see, you know, multiple divorce decrees on the same person. They're handled in the order they're received, essentially. So the order that if one court order awarded, say, the entire survivor annuity to the spouse, and a second court order came in and tried to do the same thing, the second one would be considered contingent upon the first court order.
Really?
Because they take them in date order. They take them in date order. So if there's multiples, you can't award more than
what's there
the maximum
to award.
What's awardable, yeah, right? So for a survivor annuity under FERS, for instance, can't be more than 50% of the person's annuity as a survivor annuity because the law doesn't provide for any more than that. And if it did, so if two spouses were awarded 40% each of the – or let me – I'm trying to think of a different way to say it. If two spouses were each awarded an amount where the two that they – both of them together combined would be over the limit, then the first spouse, the first one whose court order was received would get that full share or whatever it was, and the second one would get – what was left, essentially. Mm-hmm. And the same would be true for if someone's remarried and for their current spouse. We could be limited by what the former spouse or spouses have been awarded.
Actually, that happened to me with regards to some attorney friends. And they had this. First of all, I wouldn't know the answer anyway, but especially with regards to this, you know, if the first one gets this, the second one gets that. I don't know. Do they go back and redo the first one? No way.
No, I mean, again, OPM's going to give the second – let's say a second one was received. Okay, so 10 years later, the person had gotten remarried and then divorced again. Here comes another court order based on the same person, right, who's still working. You know, the court order was there. The letter is going to tell them that this is what they're entitled to.
There's one more after this. But can a federal employee delay the former spouse from obtaining the benefits? Because Social Security has this other provision, but Social Security and the annuity are two different pieces, right?
They're different things. They're awarded differently, and how a court order affects them is different. So can they hold someone off, quote unquote? Well, first of all, under the federal retirement benefit, nothing is payable to the former spouse until the person actually retires. So in some respects, we did have a case of this where someone refused to apply for their annuity because they didn't want their former spouse to get a share of it. So this person actually made themselves essentially destitute. They were entitled to annuity. They'd separated for retirement. But to be eligible, you have to not only be eligible, meet the age and service requirements, and separate for retirement. You also have to apply for the benefit. So this person just didn't apply for their benefit. And they were probably entitled to, you know, a good $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, who knows, a month, which they essentially foregoed because they didn't want their spouse to get a penny. So they essentially made themselves destitute by not applying for their annuity and not having any income.
What if that individual had some other funds? Of course, the attorneys are going to know about that. They'll want a piece of that, but they could live without the annuity. I mean, it's taken spite to its nth degree. And the other one just has to wait or make some kind of deal. I don't think – they can't make a deal. I'll take less than what I'm entitled to.
I suppose they could. They could waive a portion of what they're entitled to or something. But, for instance, in this person's case, it was extreme. I mean, this when I say homeless, I don't mean, you know, they right. – I mean, they looked the part, came in wearing rags, came in once a year to check to see if the law had changed and whether they wanted to apply for their annuity. At some point – they attempted to go to court and force the person to apply for retirement. But he was eligible for a voluntary retirement. Voluntary retirement is what it says, voluntary. No one can make you apply for a benefit if you don't want to. And a person, They couldn't appoint a guardian and have someone have the guardian apply for the person because a guardian can't apply for a non-disability benefit.
Okay, so we'll end the show a little bit on the upbeat side. We really zeroed in, but we're not talking about things that people look forward to or even like going through. But have you ever seen a case where the both sides, well, that's fair, you know, and I'm going to do this, and, you know, how do we divide this up? Do you ever get that?
Well, sure. I mean, once I realized I wasn't going to be able to negotiate out of giving up part of my retirement, then it just becomes a matter of negotiating how much. How much is someone entitled to for X number of years?
All righty. Then I guess the final question is, we've talked a lot about this is what you do, this is how it works, but what about the people who just don't really have a clue about this? I would imagine in bigger cities where federal employment is prevalent or high, but you know, outside of those areas, should they be aware that there's a benefit here to be had or to be taken away? I guess that's a stupid question. As I listen to myself talk,
it's not really a stupid question because OPM trains federal agencies and HR specialists at federal agencies. I used to teach a course on court order benefits so that agency personnel would know what laws could affect someone's retirement and be able to effectively counsel both employees and former spouses because they have a sort of an obligation to both.
Okay. What was your happiest example where you thought this was not going to be good, but the two people, after they listened to logic, not that you're dealing with the people, but you provide, I guess, guidance in the form of written stuff, and they go, okay, that now I get it.
Well, as you can know, whenever someone's talking about money, you know, the people will dig their heels in. But, yeah, eventually someone has to understand that they can't get away from it and negotiate the best thing they can.
Well, that's the way to end the show because I'm told we have about 5 seconds left. But everybody that's listening, tell your friends about this and tune on to next week's show. And, of course, it's available on podcast. But, Phil, thanks.
Bob, thanks. Always a pleasure.
All right. It's a pleasure for me because I learn. All righty. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WAPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.